We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Welcome to Webcology here on WMR.fm. It's the 7th of November, 2024, and the world woke up to a startling realization this week. Donald J. Trump, the 45th and soon to be 47th President of the United States, was reelected. Slightly more than half of America was jubilant. Very slightly less than half of America was completely despondent. And the rest of the world woke up wondering what this means for, well, working with America. It's going to be a weird show a little bit. I'm not from the United States. I live in Canada, which is the United States' largest trading partner, and now immediately threatened with great instability. In fact, I'm pretty sure my business is threatened with instability if the president-elect goes ahead with the promise he made to put tariffs on all imports into the United States. I can't even imagine what people who are not jubilant about his election inside the United States are feeling now. I know that the search marketing community is split fairly evenly. Strangely, but fairly evenly, between Trump supporters and people who are not supporters of Trump. I think listeners, long-term listeners, short-term listeners, listen to one of our episodes, and you have a pretty good idea where both Christine and I stand politically.
Yeah.
Tech itself is agnostic, but the ownership of many of the large tech firms is not. The technology we work with as SEOs, as pay-per-click experts, as social media experts, or as, you know, as developers. That's technology. It's ones and zeros. It's divs. It's JavaScript. It's, you know, it's a machine made of numbers. But again, the people who work with the financial numbers, the owners of the machines, have very strong and apparently quite definitive ways of making their opinion known. So, moving forward in the tech industry in a time of, well, very, very likely in a time of emerging fascism, is going to be weird. I'm not sure how we're going to deal with it on the show. I know that it's funny because Christine and I both talked yesterday when we were sort of shell-shocked and stunned and agreed that we're going to try to keep politics out of the show as much as possible. And I was the one whose idea it was in the first place to say we're going to keep politics out of the show. And here I am doing an opening monologue all about politics. So I don't know how we're going to keep that promise because it's very hard to separate what happens in the financial world from what happens in the world we work in, because they do work in lockstep with each other fairly frequently.
Well, and also, I mean, we have people that are working with Trump who are hoping for cabinet positions, like Musk, who own tech. So it's kind of impossible to keep it completely separate at this time.
Indeed, we've seen the acquiescence of tech companies to the Trump message before the election. I'm thinking notably of Amazon owner Jeff Bezos with his with the Washington Post, and obviously Elon Musk with Twixter and Mark Zuckerberg with Meta. Yeah, and then again, the Zuckerberg Musk is actually seeking cabinet positions.
He's seeking a cabinet position. He apparently
Minister
wasn't.
Minister of Efficiency, I believe.
Yeah, well, not minister, we don't minister, but yes, that's a Canadian term, but yeah. We found out today that he told Trump it'd be a good idea to appoint him for that.
And by the way, it's not like these alpha males, these macho men are going to allow anybody to call them a secretary or anything. No, he's going to be a minister. He's going to be a minister because that goes with the whole nationalism thing. Ministers are muscular. Secretaries wear skirts. That's musky thinking, right?
Probably. He wants to have a cabinet position to oversee efficiency and regulations, which means he is regulated by the groups that he would be overseeing. So he'd be overseeing his own regulation, which has a lot of issues. So remember, it does still have to be appointed by Congress. He can't just appoint it. And then he said to be prepared for some very hard times as he pushes something austerity wise. But it will all be better for it in the end. My guess is he's going to try to push crypto as a replacement for currency, because he's been trying to do that outside the government for the last 20 years. So why wouldn't he do that if he had the actual ability to do it with the government? So,
I think it's an absolutely safe bet, as well as changing parts of the parts of regulations that oversee banking in the states to allow Twitter and even PayPal to be actual banks.
Yeah, and he definitely, we know for many years now, he's still been doing it. When they started PayPal with the idea of using cryptocurrencies to replace real fiat currencies. The problem with that is cryptocurrencies are unstable and easily manipulated, and they're fairly anonymous on who's manipulating the crypto. You know the wallet, but not the person. So the dollar is not easily manipulated that way and varies very little from day to day. So with the dollar, you know your paycheck is worth XYZ for the time being, unless something major changes in the atmosphere. Whereas with crypto, it could change on a daily basis depending on who's manipulating the market. So there are a lot of issues with that concept. We'll see what happens, but that is why I believe he wants to, like you said, it oversees his organizations. It allows him to create regulations or bypass them. And then in addition, he said we'd have devastating times, something like that. It was devastating, or they'd be very difficult for a while, but at the end, it would be a much better world. Just to remind people right now, the U.S. is the top economy in the world, has a 2% inflation rate, has an $85,000 per person GDP, and is considered the economy that is holding up the rest of the world. So while our gas prices and groceries have been a bit more expensive because of corporations and how oil works, the economy itself is doing very, very well. So the idea of crashing the economy, which he said that they'd have to do, doesn't sound like a fun time to me. So we'll see what happens.
You know what's just quite annoying from the rest of the world perspective? Aside from like serious oil producing nations like Saudi Arabia, you know who has some of the cheapest gas on earth? Oh. Because it's subsidized by the government itself?
Us?
America.
I know, right?
You guys already have the cheapest gas on earth. Having it a few cents cheaper is, Often, American voters don't understand where they stand in relation to the rest of the world. They think they're hard done by, when in fact they have more than everybody else. Sometimes more than everybody else put together.
I remember the first time I went to Europe and I saw the price of gas, and it was per liter, not per gallon. And I think at the time it was something like £6 or something. I was like, holy cow, this is really expensive. Right? So, and in the US at that time it was like $1.50 or something a gallon. So anyway, yeah, so lots to see what's coming. I will tell people, just so they know, they can go read it. We don't need to discuss it, Jim, but it is something that came out today. They will be implementing Project 2025. They have come forward and said that. Yeah, but they had been denying it. Today they came out and said it. They have a 180-day plan for everything they're going to do in the first 6 months, so I suggest everyone go read it. That is the future of our world, and like Jim said, right now, everything's kind of up in the air. So.
Okay, so the only the thing that we care most about on this show is how this affects you, your business, how you operate your business, where you go to work in the morning and with whom you work. We'll keep you in touch. We'll keep you as informed as we can. Again, being a Canadian who works primarily with American businesses, I'm an importer to America, an exporter from Canada. I export, a knowledge product. And I'm obviously, I have to watch this very, very closely. Most people in Canada, in the Canadian search marketing or the Canadian digital marketing industry, actually work for American companies. That's just kind of how the, kind of how it goes when you're the junior partner in the largest trading relationship on earth. Okay. So how will a, one of the ways we know a Trump presidency will immediately affect tech is the plans to dismantle safeguards that the Biden administration has set up for the development, training, and use of AI into the future. Christine, Ars Technica is reporting that it's a deregulate whenever possible stance. What does that mean moving forward?
You know, it's hard to know because the regulations have just been barely started, right? They're emerging out of the industry because the industry is so new. It does say he could strip away federal regulation of AI. State governments may be able to fill in the gaps. But, as we know, the person at OpenAI that was the head, well, he's the head researcher, right? AI researcher and security researcher. He left because he didn't think OpenAI was following the standards they had set internally well enough to protect people from potential harm. And so the idea that we would now take the few regulations that exist, and there are not many, and remove those is concerning. Johnson said, Speaker Johnson, he would like to streamline the CHIPS Act and put it in there. And I don't know. It's just not a lot of detail right now because I don't know. He's not president yet, and he doesn't like to tell people things before they happen. But it will mean that we will have lack of federal regulations on something that's as potentially damaging as a nuclear bomb. Not that it's going to blow up a city, but that it could create immense havoc in the world if it's not handled properly, because they're talking about AGI as well. So, and advanced military applications as well. Without regulation is just dangerous.
Well, we do know that during his campaign, Trump told us that he was interested in AI development centering around free speech and human flourishing, which was very likely written for him by somebody working at Grok. He's also called AI dangerous and seems to be aware of the high energy requirements.
Oh, and also, just so we throw it out there, because it is in the same article and people know, Republicans will repeal the Bipartisan CHIPS and Science Act, which spurred the domestic production of semiconductor chips. So when we had the pandemic and we all ran out of chips and we couldn't buy phones and cars and things like that, the Democrats put together the CHIPS and Science Act. And what it does is created manufacturing in the United States, created a lot of manufacturing jobs in the United States. And so they're going to undo that, which means we will not make the chips here. So if there's another pandemic or something happens in Taiwan where we get a lot of these special chips, we would not be able to produce them. We'd be at the mercy of other countries. And so I don't know the reasoning for removing it. They don't give it, and I don't think he has said it. But just keep an eye on that because that is super important. Super important to manufacturing and super important to our livelihoods, because if you don't have chips, you don't have computers or phones or any of that good stuff.
That's something that's absolutely worth watching moving forward, in that I have a hard time seeing them. I mean, I know Johnson threatened to cancel the CHIP Act, but I mean, there's just so many jobs, and bringing foundries and solidifying foundries in America is national security stuff.
Yeah,
I find that quite surprising if they actually do that. But it is something that say you live in Upper New York State where there was going to be a foundry opened. You might want to talk to your congresspeople. You might want to talk to your representatives when you figure out who they're going to be.
Yeah, because Johnson can act outside of Trump ordering it. So if they've agreed, Trump and him, on doing this and removing the CHIPS and Science Act, then you're going to lose everything that has been helping people with, especially manufacturing, which is one of the industries America has suffered with in the last decade or two. So.
In other news, OpenAI made a massive purchase. It spent $15.5 million buying chat.com from the founder of HubSpot, Dharmesh Shah. $15.5 million for chat.com. I'm sorry, no, my mistake. I'm sorry, Shah bought chat.com for $15.5. OpenAI has acquired it for an undisclosed amount.
Wasn't Shah the secret buyer for OpenAI? Yeah. Altman spilled the news himself, but Shah has taken X to say secret acquirer of the 15+ million dollar domain chat.com revealed, and it is exactly who you think it is. So it is $15 million.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but I swear that's it. You and I were saying earlier, like, that seems like pretty low for chat.com. Like, I remember back in the day when a domain could go for like that, $30 million or more dollars. So that's interesting, but I don't know. I mean, chat, yeah, it's simpler, but it kind of takes the branding out, right? The GPT branding. So maybe that's intentional, but I would have left the GPT branding in.
I know. I think it's absolutely intentional. They're marketing chatbots, much in the way that people were marketing search engines in the past. Eventually, people stopped calling them search engines and just truncated it to search.
Yeah.
I'll bet you, and so they'll truncate chatbots, get rid of the bot bit, because the bot bit is kind of confusing. Bot is one of those ubiquitous words that's used in a million different ways for a million different things on the web. But they'll keep chat. So I think is actually a really smart move and a really smart acquisition. People won't be doing chatbots, they'll be doing chats when they're, you know, querying for information or trying to get something written for them.
Yeah, I was more talking about ChatGPT than chatbot, but it does now redirect. So and it now goes to chat.com. So if you go to ChatGPT and you find out that it's chat.com, you are not crazy. It has redirected itself to that new domain.
Okay, I really do not like doing trickster stories. I was hoping not to have to do a lot of trickster stories after Tuesday night. Unfortunately, I think we're going to be having to do a lot more trickster stories in the future, because I don't see it fading as a communications medium now. But Elon Musk, after taking over Twitter, turning it into the bottomless pit of racism that's become X, has actually set off a race to the bottom in other social media companies. They, at one time, social media companies tried to provide an environment free of racism, sexism, misogyny, homophobia, and other bad stuffs. Now they don't seem to care, and Musk being able to get away with that at Twixtr.com without losing his user base or having them all walk away from him, because how can he be participating in that, seems to have given them cover.
Yeah, it does. It seems like that because they used to not do, like, Meta laid off 11,000 employees, most in the trust and safety area, and Google followed suit, axing 12,000 people similarly. And then Twitch, owned by Amazon, disbanded its safety advisory council this year. I'm not really sure why they just follow the person that did the thing that's probably not the best thing, but they did.
Because you can get away with it and save money. Honestly, that's why they did it, because you can get away with it and you can save money.
Yeah, but did Musk actually get away with it? Because he lost 90% of it, his advertisers, and
Yeah, but
he's
Musk didn't
out.
care about making money with Twixter. That wasn't the point. Taking
That's
out
true.
the what happened Tuesday was the point. It's not about money for Musk. He's the richest man in the world. He doesn't care. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
Having the greatest propaganda tool of all time was the toy in getting Twitter. Money? Whatever. He's the richest person in the world. He doesn't care. Never cared.
So, possibly true. Although I think he does care about the how much it's fallen, just because it's embarrassing. But they had a global team of 40 to 30,000 people at Meta when they started firing them, and on Twitter, he I think he got rid of almost the entire team for safety and disinformation, misinformation, and hate speech and misinformation. Of course, has increased. We know all the research shows that. As being part of the Community Notes team on there, there was an article last week criticizing Community Notes as not being able to keep up. And it's like, because it was never intended for that. It's only intended to leave notes when possible from a team of volunteers. None of us are paid. So unfortunately, Musk now tells everybody the Community Notes team is a safety team, but we're not. We're like, really, really not.
Well, and you were set up to fail if you were supposed to be the safety team.
Yes, and also how the algorithm works on Community Notes. We've talked about this before. You have to have two people that kind of disagree normally when they rate things. So the person that thinks peanut butter is rainbow colored and the person who thinks peanut butter is brown have to agree. And that doesn't always happen, and it doesn't happen for a while after the post's been up. So sometimes the post has a million views by the time it gets a note, and who sees it after that? So
Frightening thing.
unfortunately, yeah, it is unfortunate that other companies decided
The
to come along and follow.
frightening stat along here. In the United States currently, 54% of adults now get at least a little bit of their news from social media. If you go look at people younger than me, younger than age 50, you're looking at 64% of people age 30 to 49 and 78% of people age 18 to 29 getting their news primarily from social media.
Yeah, it's insane because they've been told mainstream media is bad, and then go to Twitter and TikTok. And I do go there to get leads for stories, like what's trending, what's popular. But I find the real journalists and the real publications, but not everybody does. They believe, Joe Schmo with a TikTok account who tells you something, and they don't always look it up. So we have to make sure we are take personal responsibility too
There's a lot
on.
more Joe Schmoes at TikTok than there is actual journalists. The
Oh yeah, of
ecosystem
course.
that paid for and employed journalists has been broken down, ironically, by one of the nicest and most conscious people you'll ever meet. Have you ever met Craig Newmark, the guy who founded Craigslist?
I have not.
He is one of the I mean, he's not as relevant a person as he was 20 years ago, obviously. But although Craigslist is still one of the most trafficked websites on the web, Craig Newmark is one of the nicest, most progressive and conscious people you'll ever meet. He has a smooth, jazzy, velvety voice.
Oh,
One of
nice.
Brandy's favorite people that she's ever met, Brandy Babin, one of the owners of WMR.fm. He actually, I think if I remember correctly, Craig used to actually host a show with us years and years and years ago. But Craigslist destroyed the classified ad sections of all the newspapers
It
around the
did,
world.
yeah.
And that was what paid for the newspapers. That's what paid for the journalists. It was paid for the newsrooms. My mom died at the beginning of October, and it cost over $6,000 to publish an obituary for her for 2 days.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
So imagine that at scale,
Yeah.
and what that actually paid for in the olden days. Read 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Now the majority of people get their news from Joe Schmo on TikTok.
Yes.
We used to have journalists who went out and had codes that they had to follow to
Yeah.
develop stories. And if you look at the search marketing industry, I would suggest Search Engine Journal follows that code pretty closely because Lauren Baker, its founder, was a journalist. He started
Okay.
it. He was a techie, but he was a journalist at heart
Yeah.
when he
Yeah.
started.
When I wrote there, all my stuff was checked. In fact, we even had a lawyer check some of my stuff.
Yeah,
Not because I was writing something wrong, but just because it could cause an issue for the publication if
and
Google decided to have a problem with it. So they checked, have a lawyer check
because
it.
they're journalists,
Yes,
and that's
exactly.
the checks and balances you go through as a journalist.
And we kind of have this misnomer now that personal opinion is the same as journalism. Now there's some amazing people on TikTok that have a huge experience, like a guy who was an executive in the oil industry, or a guy who worked at the border for 10 years. And they give great information about how all those work for them, but that doesn't give you the information you need for context and history and understanding and for verification that their experience isn't just their experience and is actually the experience of like the entire industry. So they're very good and they try to do that, but they're not journalists and they're not fact-checked or
Well, and
double-checked
also,
or.
experience isn't news. Just because it happens to Joe doesn't mean it happens to
Right.
everybody. Experience ain't
Anecdotal
news.
evidence. Anecdotal evidence is evidence of an anecdote. I was a sociologist by education, and you're like, that didn't happen to me. And it's like, yeah, but it happened to a million other people, just not where you live. So yeah, so experience is experience, news is news. We should get a healthy dose of people's really good opinions, but also have the background to understand that what we're talking about. So.
And for what is and to tie this back into search marketing, it was actually a story that we're if we have time, we're actually going to get to. That's a little bit further down the grid about if you really, really want success in SEO, don't necessarily believe everything that your auditing tool tells you, and same thing, don't necessarily believe everything that you see in SEO forums on Reddit,
Oh yeah.
even in some of the journals, and check everything. Check with your peers. More importantly, check with Google Developer Docs or Bing Docs. Although Google has by far the best set of developer docs. Always double, triple check. Although again, with most of the stuff in the search marketing industry, in the actual journal Search Engine Watch, Search Engine, I'm sorry, Search Engine Land, Search Engine Journal, and oh my
This
God,
is a round table.
thank you. SE
Yes.
Roundtable.
Yeah,
They strive
that's
incredibly
very
hard for
true.
accuracy.
Yes, they do. They do very much so. So when you find though somebody who's giving you disinformation, what should you do?
Well, if you try to block them, that may or may not help.
Yes, so Twitter has now implemented the block anti-block feature. By the way, I found a really annoying component of it this week. So what happens now is you block them, and sometimes it takes 2 or 3 times to actually get the block to work. They can still see your post. You can still see them. But oddly, in the thread itself, it will block their post from you seeing it. You have to go back out and come back in from the top of the post to be able to see it. Also, another thing that's weird about it is now that I block somebody, when they do reappear, because it sometimes reappears and sometimes doesn't in the thread, I don't know that I blocked them. So I have to go and look to see that they're blocked. So Twitter should at least add something like a red square or something to the person's front-ending tweet, so you know that person has been blocked, because otherwise you have to click into them. And since bots and fake accounts have been crazy busy the last 2 days, I think I've had to block over 100 or more in the last 48 hours. You kind of like to know when you block somebody, they don't just appear in the feed like they were never blocked in the first place. It's kind of dumb. I don't know what he's trying to accomplish with it. But then again, it's Elon Musk. Whoever knows? What do we ever know about what he's trying to accomplish with things? He just gets an idea in the
Oh,
middle of the night and just does it.
no, Musk, this makes perfect sense to me.
It does?
Musk,
Tell me,
yeah,
please.
you might not want the antisocial message in your inbox, but Musk does want the antisocial message in your inbox. He wants you
Oh,
and
that.
everyone else to get that message. In fact, he wants a tool in which he can give messages to everybody at once, this exact same time.
That's
And he does
why. So
not
then
want
he can
anybody blaming
post.
that. What good is spending $45 billion on the world's strongest propaganda machine if you can't propagandize to everyone?
Oh, that makes so much sense. So he couldn't just do himself. I mean, he could, but he didn't want all the press for it. So he just did it to everybody. And now everybody who's blocked him, which is a lot of
Steve
people,
Bannon needs to be
have to
able
see
to
it.
propagandize to everybody.
But also
Stephen
Elon
Miller needs
Musk.
to be able to propagandize to everybody. Donald Trump needs to be able to propagandize to everybody, and
Yep.
nobody should be able to stop them. That's what you
But
were just told.
I also think You're right. It's more related specifically to him because remember how they had them change the algorithm so everyone got his stuff more often and more frequently at the top of their feed or
Why
their, you know,
else would
for
he
you stuff.
buy, spend
Yeah.
$45 billion on
So,
something if it isn't to self-aggrandize his own ideology?
yeah. And a whole bunch of people had blocked him, like tens of thousands of people had blocked him. Now they have to see his stuff.
No, they
That
have to
makes
see
sense.
his stuff.
Otherwise, it didn't make any sense to me.
Goebbels
Okay,
should
it
have
makes
had it
sense.
so good.
So, moving on to our next year. I love this story just because the bees have it.
Okay,
Bees,
so
nice
it
to see
takes a
this
lot of
corporation.
energy to sustain to use artificial intelligence, a massive amount of computing power,
Yes.
and given the demands on AI right now to write the standard "What I Did Last Summer" essay, a lot of them. Anyways, a lot of people using AI, and it's costing a lot of energy, and so much so that the plan is for companies like Meta, Google, etc., Amazon, to grab their own nuclear power plants. Now, I'm actually a big proponent of nuclear power. I love nuclear power. I think nuclear
Yeah,
power
you and
is
I differ on this.
safe, excellent, and most importantly, it scales so fast. But it's really expensive, and if you don't know what you're doing, you can create a environmental nightmare. Although, again, newer nuclear technology is much, much insanely much safer. Anyway, no matter what you build, nuclear powered or not, you gotta be careful where you're building it. You're not allowed to disturb sensitive ecosystems. You're not allowed to put your new thing on top of other people's things or other creatures' things, including bees.
Yes, especially bees.
As it turns out, a nuclear power plant that Meta wants to build, I'm sorry, of a data center right next to an existing power plant, they can't build that data center because they would be building it on top of the home of an extremely rare endangered species of bee.
Yes, and we know we need the bees because without the bees, we all die.
Well, yeah,
They can't, yeah.
bees pollinate fruit for us. Without them, we would have no food.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, such as you make it a plant, I guess, but even that requires fruit and vegetables. Yeah, so I just kind of like the idea that the bees right now are winning. We don't know if that'll be the same next year, but right now the bees are winning. So they
Yeah.
can't build the plant because it's a rare bee and we should respect that we were not here first. They were. And so no matter how big your corporation, the little bee gets to live. So,
Okay. Now, for what it's worth, this isn't the only thing that's stopping Meta from acquiring its own nuclear plant. There's also a great deal of regulation that they have not yet met. It'll be much easier to meet the regulation than it will be to get rid of the bees.
very
So.
true. So
Okay, you know,
it
that was a weird one.
is.
You worried about SEO taking your job? Well, if you're a Google-only SEO, you might. But you shouldn't, because Google has its Google's going to be very similar to how Bing is dealing with this. Best way to rank in new search GPT, ChatGPT search, is to rank well at Bing. Best way to rank well at Bing is to be a good SEO.
Yes. I saw a post today on LinkedIn about ranking in AI, and I've seen a whole bunch of people saying, what should we call it now? Not SEO. It's what do you call ranking in AI? And I'm like, you just call it SEO because there's still a misnomer out there that the LLM, large language model, is doing the search function, which it's not. They're co-processes. We don't know what Google calls theirs, but we do know that Bing calls them Orchestrator and Prometheus, and they go out and they search and bring back citations to ground the large language model so it's more accurate. Large language model is still predictive text. So I just love that when people are like trying to find out how to do better in these overviews or these AI pieces, it's like just do better in search because we know that Google from a study from SEO Clarity is picking from the top 20, 90% or more of the time. And so they didn't start that way. So if you're confused, they did not start that way. This is recent, just this summer. And now we know also in ChatGPT, they're using right now the Bing index. And so as long as you're doing well in Bing, then you can do well in GPT.
And
So, and
I'm
oh,
sorry.
one more thing I forgot to say. We know this is true in Google AI overviews because they've already confirmed it, but also in Bing overviews, AI overviews. They call, I don't know what they call them, I forget. You are, if it's penalized that the site has been given a devaluation, it doesn't show up. Just like in Google, if it has a devaluation, it won't show up. Because it's now got an issue of suppression thing that keeps it from showing in other features that Google has or that Bing has. And so if you want to do well, just be really good SEO. That's it. It's not easy.
But as for what we're going to call ourselves, I mean, SEO. I've been doing corporate SEO for quite a while, so I feel more like a Sisyphus than I do a Prometheus. rolling that boulder up the hill over and over and over again, only to have my guts eaten out by a buzzard. That's
no,
my client meetings,
it.
Right? Yeah, those client meetings. I don't want to call myself a rag man, mostly because that's really sexist.
That's
and kind of gross, too. So, yeah, I don't know. But I think, honest to goodness, of all the terms, raggedeer is probably the closest. Given that's the crossover process between, like, generative AI and the actual search engines, right?
SEO, because we're still just doing SEO. They decide if they pick us or not. You can't actually
appear
in there. You don't appear in there, like, number one. Like, you do great SEO, and you go to number one. The overview decides whether it pulls you in as a citation. It's limiting it now to the top 20 in Google for the most part. We don't know about Bing, but it looks like they mostly come from the top two. So you just have to do well there, and you will not always show up. And sometimes you'll show up and then you'll go away. Because it's a large language model just searching for information to ground its writing in. So it's more accurate because it's predictive text. So it predicts the text better if it knows what the patterns are in the stuff you're trying to bring back.
Ragifiers. We're ragifiers.
Ragifiers.
What do you think? What do you think? Ragifier.
Oh, let's move on to the next story.
Okay. Well, this is a great story. You want $1 million bucks? You want $1 million bucks?
Yes, you might be a ragifier if you use Bing. It has nothing to do with AI. But you could win $1 million bucks.
You could.
You could. I mean, it's,
now,
you know.
Unfortunately, this is just like Highlander. There can be only one. Only one person is going to win $1 million bucks, but 10 people will win $10,000 just for using Bing. Now, here's the problem. You got to admit to using Bing. No, actually, Bing's really cool.
Yeah, it's actually getting much better. So I use it for the show when I'm trying to find news stories. It's much better than Google News. So
Microsoft's doing, like Microsoft is maybe stealing a book out of the gospel according to Musk. It's going to give a jackpot of $1 million to one searcher. Doesn't say when.
Yes. So you log into your Microsoft account, mm-hmm. sign up if you don't have one, you use it, and you get an entry. And you can get up to 200 possible entries per week. They explain better on the page what qualifies to give you an entry. And you can track your entries, and it says, the sign into the rewards page, select redeem and order history. Look under status. Bing explains that an entry would take 72 hours to post. It could take 3 days to post your entry. Anyway, it doesn't apply to everybody in the world, but most of our listeners, US, Puerto Rico, Canada, the UK, France, and Germany ends December 31st, 2024. So I already use Bing. So I'm just going to make sure to sign in so I can get the entries. And you and I win $1 million. And then, then we can just do this full time.
Nope. If you need motivation besides the chance to win $1 million or 10 chances to win $10,000, for every a person who gets 50 entries or more, Microsoft is going to donate $5 up to $500,000 to UNICEF and the World Wrestling Federation, not the World Wildlife Federation.
World Wildlife Fund.
World Wildlife Fund. Right.
Yes. So you're helping charities at the same time. Those are both excellent charities. So anyways, you want to try to win $1 million, just use Bing.
Okay,
so now it's actually really good.
If the chance of winning $1 million or being one of 10 who wins $10,000 or helping UNICEF and those animals who do have bank accounts, the helping out animals to the World Wildlife Fund, if that itself doesn't motivate you, maybe a nice, sparse, mellow search screen and search results screen will, because it's coming up again. Microsoft Bing is going to be removing 27 features from search experience. We reported on this a couple of weeks ago. We still don't know what those 27 features will be, and we haven't even seen them removed yet. But it will be sparser and mellower in the future.
Yes, and maybe they're listening to us. Because remember, my only complaint about Bing has been they don't know how to edit their design, their page design, their UIX. So I'm happy to hear they're going to be editing it. And this was also confirmed by Fabrice Canel, who we know. Mustafa, I cannot say his name, but he's the CEO of Microsoft AI.
Suleiman.
Suleiman, thank you. So anyway, yeah, so that's good to know. So you can win $1 million and you'll get a simpler thing to use. And right now for me, Bing is often better than Google. I have to use Google though because of our clients. Otherwise, I'd probably use Bing way more often.
Yeah.
So go ahead. So
this is an effect of, okay, said this a million times. The holy grail of search has always been direct personalization. Christine should, from the search's point of view, Christine should get search results that are Christine specific. I should get search results that are completely Jim specific, and you should get search engine results that are specific to the way that you search, what you use your computer for, what you're interested in, etc. The fact that I really enjoy a couple of pizza parlors in Toronto is completely irrelevant to listeners who live in Atlanta. They should have their own sets of pizza parlors they really enjoy.
Well, that's Google's thinking. That's local search, but so people don't get confused.
Along
but
yeah, those lines, so.
It is the right point, yeah. But actually, I disagree. I think it should be pretty much the same, except with some postings that are very local,
okay.
Which they have been doing. But yeah, go ahead.
Again, the holy grail has always been hyper-personalization. And this next story is a inadvertent effect of their move towards hyper-personalization. You know, Christine, the search results you get back are directly affected by how you enter the query.
Mm-hmm.
And how Google sees you enter the query is directly affected by Google's perceptions of who you are as a search user. So
yes.
Google will change information it posts in Google Snippets based on trying to provide the most accurate possible answer it can to its interpretation of your exact search query. So you could be searching for blue widgets with some modifier attached to it. I could be searching for blue widgets with another modifier attached to it. Or we could even just be searching for blue widgets, each of us, but we have different search histories. Google might produce like different search snippets, and sometimes they might even contradict each other.
Well, actually, they contradict each other often. Oh, it's been going on for some time. I think I've noted to you before that one of the reasons I don't look at like the AI overviews is because they constantly like contradict each other. It looks like, yes, this is good. No, it's bad. And here's the neutral answer. These typically show up in financial, medical, and political or current events. So my guess is there's also a little bit of protecting the CYA of Google. Because this way, if they don't give a direct answer, they can't be held responsible for the answer that's given. They've given you the different answers, and you pick which one you like best. It is done on user intent, though. You are right. But it does have a lot of bias. It's a study done by Sarah Presh at Dragon Metrics, discovered Google's featured snippets pull opposing statements from the same articles when using users frame questions differently. So, and this is from Search Engine Journal and written by Matt Southern. So it is interesting. It is something they've been doing for a while, but they do like to, Mark Williams Cook, a founder of AlsoAsk, commented on the findings stating, Google builds models to try to predict what people like, but the problem is this creates a feedback loop. If confirmation bias pushes people to click on links that reinforce their beliefs, it teaches Google to show people links that lead to the confirmation bias. This is also very true. This is something that's done over time. So anyway, yeah, so it's a thing that's happened, but it's good to see a study confirmed it. It's not just something we observed. Anecdotal evidence is just evidence of an anecdote, but search, doing actual research is evidence of something being true and factual, at least for that research.
Yeah, here's an interesting one. This is a I'm not sure if this is actually a real leak or Google dropping information in advance to see how the consumer reacts to it, but it's being called a leak. So the existence of a new AI that Google's developing called Jarvis has was leaked last week in the Google store. Now, again, I thought this was a weird one when I first saw the story, thinking there's no way this is an actual leak. This is Google publishing the information to see how everyone goes, oh, my God, look at this new, really cool toy. And it is kind of interesting and kind of scary at the same time, because Jarvis is going to allow its AI to take over your cursor and complete boring, mundane tasks, filling out insurance forms, grocery, setting up your online grocery order, which is a hellish thing for me and my partner to go through. Making reservations, which you should never allow me to, or booking airline tickets, which you should never allow me to do because I always screw it up, etc. But this is a weird one because, you know, like Google's AI is like going to be from way the heck over there, remotely running my computer.
Well, it takes screenshots and it identifies items on a page. I personally, to be honest, would never use this because I see all sorts of potential vulnerabilities with something taking over your computer or your phone and making reservations or doing those kind of things. But if it's interesting to you, it's sort of like Claude, Anthropic's release a couple weeks ago where they showed it getting on somebody's computer and doing things. So that's basically what it does. It has trained on how to recognize the items in the page, and then it will complete the task for you. It's up to you whether you think that's helpful or not. Personally, I'd be worried the whole time I was doing something wrong because it involves my credit cards or my information or my data. So I really wouldn't find that it would be very helpful. It would take time.
You know what's a mundane task I want dealt with?
What's that?
All the screenshots I use as examples in the reports I write. I just did a 70-some-odd page report for a Fortune, for one of my clients, or for one of those big, important, scary ones. And I swear to goodness, my alt tab, the alt tab and the my forefinger and my thumb on both hands, alt tab, control C, control V, alt tab, control C, control V, alt tab, control C, control V. Swear to God, my fingers are falling off. If I could get somebody to that is a mundane task. I want AI to do
that. That is a mundane task. Yes. Just so from Android Police, it says it supposedly works by taking, analyzing screenshots, running them through Gemini 2.0 before deciding what actions to perform. In that sense, it resembles Apple's intelligence on-screen awareness, as well as the basic modus operandi of what the controversial Microsoft recall, which was recalled because of privacy concerns by users. They didn't want something taking screenshots all day of their what they did online. Like I said, this I would wait till it's out for a while before you would use it, just because if there are security vulnerabilities, I don't want to be the first person they're found on when someone gets control of my phone and runs an agent that does all sorts of stuff in the background that I'm not aware of what's going on. Also, I just don't, like I said, I don't see it as very helpful. Well, you said it's helpful, though, because I have screenshots, like all screenshots saved for probably like 15 years. It's like probably thousands and thousands and thousands in there. Be great if it could recognize it and pull them all together from the same website. So,
moving along, here's a weird one. You remember, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago when then-President Trump, I think that was T45, was talking about how badly Google needed to be broken up because it wasn't being fair to him.
Yes, I wrote an article about why it was being quite fair.
Well, as it turns out, now that he's transforming from T45 to T47, he opposes, apparently, he thinks it's a bad idea to break up Google because that would destroy the company. What he wants is to somehow do it without breaking it up to make sure it's more fair. I have no idea what I just read means, but that's what he said. I'm not sure he knows what it means either. But he doesn't want to break up a massive company. I think that part is clear. Or he's hesitant to pull the plug on that. And so the U.S. Department of Justice may be pulling the plug on its own case against Google. Weird, eh?
Yeah, and if we want to just go a little further into it, the FTC and DOJ would likely scrap merger review guidelines And they said it was, he thinks it's hostile. So, and FTC's ban on most non-compete clauses, employer-employee contracts could be more vulnerable to a lawsuit brought by the Chamber of Commerce. Anyway, a whole bunch of stuff's going to change. So we'll get
But
a little deep in the
Google
weeds there.
might not, which is, I think, for SEOs in the crowd, a sweet relief and really moment at the same time.
The thing is, they're not going to have the focus on monopoly issues. And this current DOJ is probably the first one that's had any focus in decades, as we know from our previous reporting. So things like even the Ticketmaster, breakup with Live Nation might even be stalled. So keep an eye on these things because if antitrust cases go away, it will change the landscape that we were expecting to occur. So.
Do you remember when our careers were starting out, they had the game of Internet Monopoly, and it had like just well, it had the typical 36 unique squares you can land on, company squares you can land on, and then the sort of monopolies things, monopoly squares, but they were all different companies. MySpace was there. AOL was there. Google was there, and it wasn't even the number one property, nor was Apple at the time, or NVIDIA. NVIDIA wasn't even on the board. Now, if we were to make a game of Internet Monopoly, we'd have entire sides owned by Amazon or Google. Meta owns an entire side of the board because the game of Internet Monopoly has been won. It's been won by the big houses. There is Internet monopolies all over the place. I think it's sad, and it makes for very poor gameplay.
Oh, which one? Which
Well, I mean, think about a Monopoly board, eh? If you were to do an Internet
Yeah.
Monopoly today, and Meta would own an entire side of the board.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I'm a little tired this week. Yes, you're right. They would. It's kind of been all reduced down to a few companies that own everything. And so antitrust is actually important because antitrust is being a monopoly is not illegal in the United States. Being a monopoly that prevents your competitors from competing against you is the illegal part of the monopoly. So if they're looking at you to break you up or move things around, it's because you have acted in a way that prevented people being able to compete with you. And since we're in a capitalistic country, capitalism, the foundation of it is competition between markets, so and in markets. So if you can't compete in the market, then you have an issue with the market not being fair. And the idea of antitrust is to make the market fair. So if that goes away, then it's a less fair market for all the Google competitors.
Last week at the Google Web Creator Summit, Danny Sullivan said something that I think kind of got misinterpreted by a lot of people. Sullivan said, and to quote, "We don't want you paying money for SEO audits to try and recover. We should be providing better guidance that removes the need for those outside instances like site migrations or more complex changes." So it sounds like Danny was saying, don't do SEO audits to try to recover. Unfortunately, that sentence didn't include the context that he was talking to people who'd been hurt by the helpful content update, people who'd had web businesses for
Yeah.
several years and seen the business dry up almost overnight when their formerly solid search rankings went away, and so did all that juicy traffic. He wasn't talking about most businesses, he wasn't talking about most people, and he was trying to say the problem that you're facing in the helpful content update to these publishers, the problem that these folks were facing wasn't going to be solved in an SEO audit. It probably wasn't going to be found there.
Yeah, so it's really important. I know the context of the story from Twitter. And so somebody said that they paid $9,000 to $30,000 for their audits, different small publishers. Okay, oh my gosh, I'm charging way too little for my audits. I can't imagine $30,000 for an audit on these sites. You saw these sites. They're small sites. I mean, they have a lot of pages, but they're not, these are not big company sites with lots of complexities. They're mostly blog-based, article-based. And so I believe he's probably specifically speaking to spending $9,000 to $30,000 on a helpful content update, which they've already been told they can't revert. Google cannot revert it. And there is not an update coming that's going to fix it anytime in the near future. Could be next year. Maybe they'll be able to do it, which again, I say, my opinion, they have a broken machine learning algorithm they can't fix because they can't revert it. that they
Well,
can avoid
this is
it.
why this is why they're saying it'll take a year or so that they can update backwards. You know, they can't go back to their old thing, but they can have updates and incrementally move them backwards.
Yes, exactly. They can roll out new algorithms that will correct the problems of the other
But
algorithm, but
even then, Google is a summation of all the math that's done on all the objects and things that are in its index put together. It'll never go back to where it was ever. It's impossible.
well, true. But this is because I can't revert it. Now, you and I both know in the history of updates, they've always been able to revert an update that's rolled out incorrectly. Yeah, sometimes we'll get a big spike and then it goes away and then it comes back and then there's a smaller one and then Google's like, oh, we were adjusting the algorithm after it rolled out. With the machine learning, they can't do that because it just gets like guidelines and processes and then it does stuff and then they can't tell because the machine learning happens in a black box. So like Matt Cutts said, they would never put it in the core ranking signals because if it broke, they couldn't fix it. And a Google developer who just left last month, I think it was, or a month before, on Y Combinator said there's a 1% error in the machine learning that caused them top 10 rankings to be wrong 15% of the time for 5 years, and no one caught it until he caught it and reported it on the way out the door. So machine learning is very different than developers and engineers developing an algorithm because they know what they put in it. They know what math they use and know how it works. Machine learning, they don't. I would say also, this is just my opinion. You do not have to agree, Jim, but I think it was very irresponsible of Google on their first rollout of a machine learning algorithm to make it a site-wide devaluation. So the problem with these people's sites is it's a site-wide devaluation, the severity of which depends on how many pages they thought were not good. And that site-wide devaluation could drop your site 40% to 90%, but on every single page on the site. So your traffic goes away. There's no way to recover it. And they were also told it wasn't about content
Oh,
at the
indeed.
summit.
So why, and as it turns out, it probably wasn't about content
It wasn't.
when it comes to this with Google. So why call it the bloody helpful content? Google, for God's sake, what are you doing to
I
people's heads?
know, right? And it's
And then,
because
and
they
here's
didn't do
Danny. Here's Danny, like, and again, to quote, we should be providing better guidance that removes the need for those outside instances like site migrations or more complex changes that may stem from an SEO audit. Danny, they're getting SEO audits because you told them it was about the content.
Yes.
For goodness
And
sake, man.
they lost 90%. And I'm going to tell people
God.
this is personal because I do audits. Audits are mandatory for websites. We find technical issues. Doesn't have to be related to an update, right? We find broken head tags, which means your pages can't be read well by Google. There's all sorts of things that affect crawling and indexing and user intent. Audits are good things. So he is only talking about the HTUs and the fact that, unfortunately, some people charge these people $9,000 to $30,000 after it was pretty well known that nobody had recovered from one. The
Well,
people that
that's
I
just.
looked at, I didn't charge them anything, or the most I charged them was under $1,000 to review their site to see if it was an HTU or a core update because they all ran kind of in the same time, and if it was recoverable at all. But
That's
just,
because you're nice people. That's because you're
well,
nice
thank
people,
you.
Christine.
I think I try to be fair, right? I wouldn't feel good about taking $30,000 from someone where I know it's probably not recoverable. So anyway, but they did do that. They did report on that. So I'm sure Danny was talking to that issue specifically.
Yeah. Well, if you, and again, Danny, you're a person of words. Use them,
Yes.
and you know how words have power, especially if you use them very specifically. Please press for Google to use it, even if it's engineers naming stuff. Please press for them to be very specific, please.
Yes, it is helpful when they're specific.
And not helpful in that content sort of way. We mean really helpful.
Yeah,
Okay.
I still think it's related to compression, which we haven't had time to go over on the show. We'll try to do it next week. Compression is a process that could identify sites as spam, but also erroneously
We talked about that last
decided.
week. We actually
Well, a
talked
little
we
bit.
actually did
A
talk
little
about
bit.
that last week. Okay,
Yeah,
so
I talked about
here's
it.
a fun one. I really enjoy this story. I love it because it's weird. Google made
A lot of
a
weird
small
here.
update to its crawl budget documentation to add something that should be pretty obvious to everybody. If you have a mobile version and a desktop version of your website, they should be very, 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 very like identical, similar. But if they're not, they should at least have the same links on them. Especially if you have a larger site that has a slightly different mobile and a desktop version. Now, your desktop version should be a scalable version of your mobile site, because everything should be focused on providing the fastest, crispest, most useful mobile version of the site possible. But, you know, I get it. Sometimes, especially with large e-com sites, you just can't do that, especially if the majority of your users are desktop users. I got this one corporate site where the vast majority of users are desktop.
Right.
And so they don't want to turn people off by having really elongated images and you know, massive space in between objects. They design for desktop, not for mobile. I mean, like, I think 4 to 5% of the audience is mobile.
Yeah. But you have to have parity.
Yeah.
That's so when Google, yeah, go ahead, Jim.
No, no, go, please say. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Yeah. Yeah. When they move sites over to mobile first in indexing, I think they finished that around, what, 2021 or 22 or something? I don't know. Last year is when
they finished. Finally finished. Yeah.
Yeah, last year.
But the bulk of it would have been done about 2004.
Yeah. It would give you a notice and it would say, we can't move you yet, basically, right? And then we're waiting to move you. And I had a site, a big e-commerce site. It was one of the last ones to be moved before the final push. And so I talked to John Mueller at Google, and he said, oh, it has to be parity. You have to have the same things on both sites, enough of it that you won't lose rankings when we move you. So you definitely want to have the same content and the same links and the same link structure on your mobile as you do your desktop, because otherwise Google cannot properly assess, especially because they assess a lot of it from your mobile site, even if your site is mostly viewed in desktop.
So if you don't have the same links on the desktop and the mobile version of the site, it could screw with Google's crawl rate. Google's not really sure about where it's going to be going off of each page from your website. And remember, Google is built to follow links, to crawl through links. And so when it encounters a link on your page, it's moving somewhere internal or moving somewhere external. It should do that, again, on both in the same way on both the mobile and the desktop version of the site. If it can't do that, it's going to get very confused and come back less frequently.
Yes, and remember, your site is always evaluated from the mobile version. So if the links aren't there, they'll find them on the desktop eventually, but that doesn't mean that they'll find them in quick order. Also, they don't actually crawl the links as they crawl. They store them and then they go back to them. So there's a difference. And you have like 100 links on the page in desktop and 10 in mobile. It'll take a very long time to find the other 90 links on that page. So that make sure they're the same.
Okay, here's a quick question. Is this kind of like a 2024 version of the early 2K's problem of cloaking? You remember when people would provide one set of information for search and then just give their users whatever?
Not really, just because the desktop isn't used for indexing and assessing your
values. Sure.
For most things, there are some things they use desktop for, like links and stuff, but mostly it's on its own. Mobile's on its own. So what next?
Okay, well, people have been asking if AI overviews are feature snippet powered. You know, if you're in the featured snippet, will you be in AI overview? Maybe, maybe not, but sometimes AI overviews are actually replacing featured snippets.
What am I doing, Jim? What am I doing? Can you see me? What am I doing? I'm shaking my head. Feature snippets are such a better product than the AI overviews, I think. Because they're definitely from a page. You definitely know which site you're going to. You don't have to decide if the content's real or not. You don't have to figure out what citation you need to use. It's like, here's the featured snippet. Here's a little information. Go to the site. So I'm kind of sad to see that they're replacing featured snippets with AI overviews. Well, I tend to skip the AI overviews for most.
They were experimenting with it. They're testing it. This may be a long-term thing, may not be a long-term thing. Maybe they're looking for a place for it to happen in, a place to place the object that's going to become the AI overviews that'll expand into the overview. Again, I think they're just messing with the composition of the search results page to see what users respond to.
True. The thing about that I just dislike about this so much is, one, it's the one we're looking at is, what's the best car for a family of five? And it's a whole listing of cards with brief information about them and then actual links at the bottom of the page that they use to ground the large language model. But I don't even know if this information is correct. It's, you know, they're wrong a lot. They're still wrong a lot. So it's like, I don't want any of this. I just want to go, give me links, give me the featured snippet. And the people also asked. That was really helpful. This is now a page that's probably 1,000 pixels long with information that's pretty much not all that helpful because it's just like a line of text after the name of the car. And then you have to click the citation to go to the page anyways. So just put it in template links. I'm sorry. I'm like, I just don't understand how this is helpful. You might be have a very totally different opinion on that. But
It,
it is
you know
going to
what?
be
It
if
really
ever people are
depends on the
shocked.
response. I think there's some responses where it's completely appropriate, and there's some responses where people are looking for information that could have a variety of answers. If I want to know what's the temperature outside my window, there's probably one answer to that, you
Well,
know?
yeah, that's true. But in this case, like the people also ask, because you guys can't see this because we're an audio show. It's like, what's the best car for a family of five? Then it gives you a
Okay,
paragraph with
now
a
that
citation.
has a number of different responses. That could be a
Right.
number of, there's a number of things to there's not a definite answer there. So I would not want the generative response because I don't, you know.
Yeah, and if you look at the featured snippet version, people also ask, what's best for a family of five? It's like probably 200 pixels tall. I just list the best family cars with a link to buy car and a description from buy car of what they are. So I just find that much easier to navigate than this massive, basically a Word doc size rollout. Anyway, so I don't need to spend any more time on it. I just, yeah, tell us what you think. Like,
I
no,
got
just.
a, I got a small confession here, and this isn't
What's
actually
that?
even my confession. It's just my partner's confession. So perhaps I shouldn't make it, but I'm going to anyway. My partner is a professional reviewer. She gets paid, sometimes in product and sometimes in money, to look at products, use them, stress test them, and sometimes she tests them on me. And I promise you, I stress test stuff. If it's gym proof, it's pretty strong. And then she writes reviews, often very honest reviews. Sometimes she pans it. Sometimes she totally trashes what she was sent to review because that's what was her experience. And she's been doing this for several years. She has she's got a long-term illness as well, so she has to work from home, and this is a good job to do from home. Google is now experimenting with a snippet that will show who reviewed an item or a service. So reviewed by, you might see in search snippets from now on, rich snippets from now on. And on behalf of my partner, I think that she's going to think this is really cool because this professionalizes the review. It personalizes, it says this person did this review.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of cool. I think it's really neat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think it'd be all that helpful for me because I don't shop on Google very often. But if you're someone who comes to learn that a reviewer's name is over time, then you could know that this was reviewed by that person. So I think that could definitely be something good for Shauna who does it professionally. And you might see her name on a whole bunch of the reviews. So
Well,
you know to trust them over time.
who doesn't love seeing their name in the newspaper?
That's true. Yes. That's it.
But again, yeah, if you know that this reviewer is trustworthy, or if reviewers get a reputation for being trustworthy, I can see this professionalizing that as a career choice moving forward.
Yes, definitely.
Really hard for AI to have actual human experiences.
They can fake it, but you're right. They don't have real human experiences because they don't experience anything. So we're good there.
This
So,
is another neat one.
yes.
A new schema that, you can have schema that tells you what shipping policies are. You can have schema tell you what return policies are. This is a schema that tells you who shipping policy is, like type of shipping service. Who's going to bring it to you? You can expect this company to knock on your door. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and also Google has made a proposal about that. If you go to Search Engine Roundtable, SE Roundtable, look Google proposes new shipping data schema. They will let you actually weigh in on what you think about it. So John Mueller from Google said, if you have thoughts about richer representation of shipping details for e-commerce sites, not Not for boats. I don't know why that's there, but it says not for boats. There's a proposal on the Schema GitHub and a chance for you to comment and ask questions. In general, poking around at the items brought up there, not the spam, might be interesting for those passionate about structured data. And it's also good to see people he knows there, but it does help improve their online shopping experiences. And they submitted this proposal to schema.org, so you can go and leave some comments on it and tell them how you might like it to present. Because the schema.org is just approving the schema that Google thinks is needed.
Yeah, it's not there yet. That was my mistake.
Yeah, that's okay. It's buried in the article. But the presentation of it is how Google decides to do it. So if you think there's a good way to present it and you like know that you'd like to see it this way, go leave a comment. Just find the article. It's, like I said, SE Roundtable, Barry Schwartz. Google proposes new shipping data schema, and you can go there and get the link to it. So that's pretty cool, though.
I didn't see this today, but yesterday I saw it. Google wasn't doing this today, but if you go to Search Console and you you know, you go to Search Console and it shows you that by default 3 month view, you can go change the date and ask it to show the most recent view or usually yesterday's data, which is partially collected, but it'll, you know, give you a better representation of where your website is closer to the time that you're in. Yesterday, that'll only give you partial data, though. It's not data or Google hasn't completely parsed all the data to tell you how people behave to give you the Search Console stuff. So yesterday, Google was representing that partial data as dotted lines. Normally, everything is a solid line, a purple line for impressions, the blue line for clicks, orange line for average ranking, etc. So if you're looking at partial data, Google would represent it as dotted line. So that was kind of neat. I didn't like it, but it was kind of neat they were doing it.
You didn't like it? It's just a presentation of it. I haven't seen it yet.
I didn't like it because you're only looking at one day at partial data usually. And the dotted line seemed really confusing against the solid. If the trend line is going upwards, the lines just point that way, not three dots, or trend lines going downwards, or even horizontal. I found the dots confusing, while the little bit of solid snippet of a line was clearer.
Yeah, it looks like from what I'm seeing here on the image, it looks like they could have used more dots and it make it look more like a line, not with the spaces between them. But I do like this because to get partial data, normally you have to change your date range and you have to go to that day to look at the partial data. So at least now you and I won't be going, hey, is it updated? Hey, is it updated? We'll know if it's updated because when it's full, it won't be dotted anymore.
For what it's worth, the partial, once you get past 2 p.m. Pacific time, I'm sorry, 2 p.m. Eastern time, maybe 11 a.m. Pacific time. That partial data for the day before is pretty solid. It's not going to go up much further. Maybe a couple hundred clicks here or there, but it's unlikely to. It's usually, I find usually about 2 p.m. my time or 11 a.m. your time, that data is pretty solid.
See, for you, it does that, but for me, it's not as regular. Because remember, we've had times where you have the update and I don't. And I'm, you know, it's after 11 my time. So I do think at least instead of going to like today's date partial data, now they just show today's up to today's date as opposed to like 3 days ago, here was your data. So, or well, no, 3 days ago is the last time they had full data. So I think it'll be helpful.
Okay. Do you use dark mode to try to save electricity on your desktop or on your mobile?
On my mobile, definitely. Also for my eyes, the white is very jarring against my eyes and makes it difficult to read things.
So, apparently, Google is testing using orange links instead of blue links in dark mode. Apparently, it's obviously easier to see against the black background. But orange is one of those weird colors design that just sort of gives people headaches and stuff. What do you think? How does it look to you?
It's okay. My guess is the reason they're doing this is a blue link is for accessibility. So blue on black. So if you're colorblind, blue.
You know, blue and black become the same thing, right?
Well, it becomes gray on black, which could be harder to discern. Mm. So, and it doesn't obviously, we know it's clickable because it's blue, but the person reading it may not be able to tell that. So in this case, if it's orange, it's much less likely to have an issue. Usually color blindness is red, green, and blue, or a combination of those. So that's I mean, I know they're doing it for those right reasons. I don't particularly like the orange. It's kind of, I don't know, kind of ugh. But maybe they'll do a better orange, or maybe they'll just let us choose in dark mode. What color do you want your links? That would be really easy and probably a better way to do it. But then if you have any color blindness whatsoever, you could use the colors that work for you. So anyway, but orange is, it's weird for this week. Maybe they did it as a Halloween joke or other purposes. We already commented on.
So Google has introduced a new Google Shopping interface. It's brighter, bigger, takes up the entire right-hand side of your screen. And to, I guess, introduce it, jubilantly introduce it to the public in screaming letters, Google has created a new Google Shopping label.
Yes. And it literally says new in blue on shopping on your tabs on Google search. By the bar is on the left, not the right-hand side.
Well,
It's like a
yes.
faceted nav you would see on a regular store. Has a map, by the way. Sorry. I hate new Google Maps. They're just horrible. They don't work right and it's very difficult to get them to find what you have to. And the old ones was much, much better. But anyway, so yeah, as Jim said, they're going to put the products on the bottom and they have a Google Maps local where you can find the page. The page is cleaner than the other page has
Yeah.
been.
And again,
Much
on the
cleaner.
left, tons of faceted navigation, sort bys, categories, pricing ranges, stores that sell various goods might be located, etc. So tons of choices. Big new Google Shopping Center. It's like Google's the mall, except you can't like meet people there.
You know, we were talking about the other day. We were at the mall and we said, we need to revive the mall because the malls work so cool and now they're not cool anymore, but they could be cool again. Anyway, yeah, you're right. And it's a much cleaner page because personally, I've hated the Google shopping experience. It's just been square after square after square after square of information. It's just overwhelming. So this is much cleaner, much easier. It looks like Amazon basically now, pretty much.
Remembering, of course, Google is just trying to take all your clicks away from you with the shopping experience, but you got to get your
Yes.
clients in there. You really do, because let's face it, our job is not only to get people across our clients' pages, it's to help them move their stuff.
Right, exactly. But I agree. It is them just taking your stuff, taking your clicks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Basically, we're working ourselves out of a job by making this happen, but we're not working ourselves out of a job because someone's got to make it happen. Catch 22,
Yes.
really.
Yes. And they'll make money. So something else they did on, Google, is it Google Shopping or just Google? Yeah. Shopping
Well,
ads.
sponsored shopping ads, yeah.
Yes. They now have a bag on the shop now. Function which takes you to the website to complete the process, which is just kind of funny because people have had bags on shopping sites for probably 15 years. So it's interesting that Google's decided to add one now and just didn't have one before. But hey, it does make it more obvious that you should shop there and you can go to the store. It doesn't have the bag, it doesn't have the store link. So this will be a direct store link.
Yep, and you know what? It's an incentive to take out a sponsored search shopping ad because you can get this really, really obvious, we'll call it an action mark. Click this action mark, you're going shopping.
Yes. And by the way, you know when Google had them last? You want to take a guess? Is that reading the article?
When did Google have it last? I don't know, sometime like a gajillion years ago?
2006. Yeah.
But a gajillion years ago. There you go. 20
Yeah.
years ago in internet time is like dinosaur era.
It's a kajillion. A kajillion. I like that. Yeah, kajillion. So yeah,
Well,
so that's all our stories for today, pretty much. Do we have any final comments? Because usually we end with a certain story, but I just didn't see any full story to end on today.
oh, you know what? There was one story to end on this week. The U.S. had a completely decisive and very likely world-changing election. Again, I guess let's call it straight out. Given the partisan nature of how me and Christine feel about stuff, it's going to be really hard to cover this with the delicate to cover all the changes that are coming with the delicacy and dispassion listeners should expect from a professional news show, but we're not a professional news show. We're a search podcast, and we're really concerned about the environment that we live and work in. and we're really concerned about the environment you live and work in. So we're going to do our best. We're going to try to cover this as openly, honestly, nonpartisanly, et cetera, as possible.
Yes.
The real thing about this is how do we help our clients survive, thrive, and you know, exceed their own goals.
And now that it's going to completely overlap because of Musk's involvement with the coming presidency, we also have a lot of things that are going to change, a lot of regulations that are being removed, a lot of issues that we're going to have to navigate. So Jim and I will do our best to give you the factual information on how to navigate those issues as they come up. I don't think there's any way we can stay completely out of it, out of politics, which we usually try to do. But we will try to, as Jim said, cover it as fairly and, you know, without, as someone might say, without very vanilla, to make it as vanilla as possible, which is without a lot of added context.
One thing I think I can promise is when we do get into our partisan weeds, we'll call ourselves on it.
Yes, that's true.
We owe you all that much, at least. We will call ourselves on it, but obviously we'll try the best to do it. In the meantime, friends, be kind to each other. Be good. Go out of your way to do nice things for people, especially if they're walking around with a frown on their face right now. We will talk to you next week. Look to the end of this interview, and also possibly sitting on its own. We do have that interview with Jano Albison that is going up. We've been having technical difficulties getting it to the web, but it will be up very, very soon, I promise. We're going to try to take it to the end of this episode. We're going to try to have it float on its own, and we're going to have it on its own episode that should have been up 2 weeks ago and should be going up, and we'll see. At any rate, until next time you hear us, biggest love, be kind. We'll talk to you next week.
See you next week. Bye, everybody.